The Alex Goldstein Property Show.
Stray FM.
Welcome to the Alex Goldstein Property Show. We are fast-paced, informative, insightful, and push the boundaries when it comes to giving you the very best insider knowledge, know-how, and expertise in the property market. We're the only property show on Stray FM, and our aim is to ensure you make the best decisions when it comes to your property. We're available for podcast download on the first of every month, so sign up to Alex Goldstein's social media accounts to get an early reminder of this and to get expert property advice whenever you need it. In this month's show, we'll be speaking with a top Harrogate lawyer on the pros and cons and tricks of the trade when it comes to renting out your home, a tree expert who supplies across Yorkshire and gives his insight into adding value to your home, plus, of course, the Alex Goldstein top tips. An incredible amount to fit in, so let's get straight on with it.
Property news with Alex Goldstein.
Stray FM.
This month, we're talking about property and the emotions involved. And it's long been known that this is one of the most stressful things you can do in life. And personally, I think this is much because we've got to navigate through a series of time-sensitive situations. And this is often exacerbated by emotions running high and, let's face it, sometimes to breaking point. Now, property, if we think it through, is probably the only deal we ever do in life where money, feelings, and as a result, stress all run equally high at the same time. So let's look at the property process itself. You come to sell your home, it's a very big decision just to reach that decision. Not only have you worked hard to secure the property first time around when you purchased it, but you've invested in improvements and had numerous highs and lows within it. Now, if walls could talk, as they say. As a homeowner, you've invested emotionally in the property. So when it comes to placing your home onto the market, you listen to the TV, the newspapers and the media, and you get hoodwinked into thinking that making everything plain and white is the right way to go. Well, that's wrong, because remember, property is emotional, so play to these strengths. Keep the photographs of the children on display, the log fire burning, or perhaps some cookbooks out by the Arga. People are buying into a lifestyle choice, so present your home to a similar theme. You then invite a couple of estate agents to pitch for your business. And whilst thoughts on guide price always rightly or wrongly seem to play the defining factor in choosing the right agent, so does the way you feel about the agent personally. Do they love and enthuse about the property as much as you would like? And if they don't, I bet you'll be showing them the door. If they do, you've made more of an emotional connection with them. Now, the very last step is as a seller. Once you've secured a buyer for your own property, the tables now turn and you're the one immediately under pressure, trying to find that elusive right property and trying to bring all the different elements together at exactly the same time. You've also got to keep your own buyer happy and you've got to check everything is progressing smoothly. Again, it gets emotional. So yeah, buying and selling property is stressful. Our emotions play a huge part in how much we allow the anxiety pressure gauge to rise. By taking a pragmatic approach and planning everything well in advance, this will go a long way to ensuring that your next property deal is less stressful. Hopefully, you may just surprise yourself and actually enjoy it. It's great indeed to have Alexander Hunt on the phone. You've got a couple of businesses, actually. Just talk everyone through, because it's quite niche and very unusual, actually.
The two horticultural businesses here, both in a village near Seven Oaks called St Mary's Platt. Firstly is Potash Farm, the cobnut and walnut growing. I grow and pick about 40 acres of nuts here, and we make a whole lot of specialist products, from chocolates, biscuits, oils, a balm with the nuts. And then I've got the tree business, which is the country's leading nursery in the supply of fruiting walnut, timber walnut, almond, Kentish cobnut and sweet chestnut trees, and they go all over the country, Alex, as you well know.
Indeed. I mean, you supply across the UK and Yorkshire. I mean, whereabouts in particular? Obviously, we're in Harrogate at the moment, so where in Yorkshire are you supplying?
We've got some very good garden customers. We split them up slightly into three categories here, but the garden customers very much in the Harrogate area and villages around. Follyfoot is one that comes to mind. York, Richmond, North Allerton. And these are people that are really sort of developing their gardens in a slightly specialist way and might be ordering one or up to half a dozen trees from us. And then we've got the larger sort of farmer and estate customer, one or two very well well-known estates in Yorkshire that we serve, nearest to sort of Helmsley, Harewood, Barnard Castle, Ripon, etc.
Wow, so you really are doing the prime points throughout Yorkshire. It's mighty impressive. I suppose depending on the amount of space, because I know this is something we've always talked about, it doesn't matter necessarily whether you've got an estate with a number of acres or indeed you've got a much smaller garden. I know you've certainly on the tree business side, you've got sort of something that can help everyone.
Very much so. I think for the smaller garden, we sell a lot of cobnut and almond trees to those perhaps in Belgravia, Chelsea and London that have sort of gravel gardens and are growing nuts trees in pots, to the small garden, right up to the big estate or farm where they've got very much more space, or houses with paddocks where, of course, sweet chestnut and walnut trees are very attractive to have as well. But they, given time, will be the height of the church tower, of course.
What would the estates look to you for?
I mean, they're looking to possibly sort of grow them and increase their tree numbers in their very nice parklands, or perhaps if they were redoing an avenue up to a house or the main house on the estate, they would use our trees. But more often than not, it's the timber selections that they're after. And I'm one of the very few nurseries in the country that supply excellent timber selections for, of course, the walnut timber, which of course is used for furniture, veneers, inlays, etc. And on some of these very big estates in Yorkshire, of forestry and the sale of timber is very much part of their mixed income these days on modern estates.
Right. Okay. And I mean, what sort of things? Is it just purely on the forestry side that they look to you for, or will they actually use the produce that the tree produces, or is it a mixture?
Well, I think it's a mixture. I think a lot of people are looking for advice as to whether the trees will grow well on a variety of soils, etc. And then, you know, I give advice to the garden person who's buying one tree, to the farmer who wants to plant perhaps a block of freezing walnuts, to the estate owner who wants to plant walnuts for timber. We're advising on all those. And at the end of the day, yes, if there's a bonus there where the family can pick some nuts and then make some nice dishes with them in the kitchen, etc., particularly in the autumn, the lead up to Christmas, so much the better. That's a really nice bonus.
Fantastic. And I know you also advise on new build development sometimes, actually, in terms of softening
quite
the look there.
A bit of new work now is sort of on the landscaping and design and planning with builders, etc. I've got some very big clients. We're doing some advisory work across the country, and I've got no doubts that some of these schemes are greatly enhanced by the right planting of good nut or other trees. I think they're adding value to the properties, whether they be new or existing, in quite a major way.
And I dare say all the different tree species that you offer, they all have different uses depending on what type of screening or otherwise that you're looking for.
We've got a very wide selection of fruiting walnut trees, and we do, I've just picked out two to talk about. One is the new one I'm introducing called the Red Danube Walnut, which is a copper beech type leaf tree, most attractive with a sort of claret coloured nut. That I think we should sell extensively, with our purple filbert being one of the cobnut species that we sell. That again has a reddish leaf, a reddish nut with a catkin. Two that are very attractive, have near a house or against a wall, etc. Almonds, of course, can be trained into any shape or an espalier, lovely for a sort of cottage garden or perhaps a slightly enclosed or more sheltered space. And of course, you're a little bit more frosty up there than we are in the southeast here. We've got three particular selections of walnut that we recommend in Yorkshire, going up to the borders in Scotland: Fernet and Fernor and Franquette, which are later coming to break into bud burst, that miss some of those earlier or later frosts.
And I know, actually, interestingly, the BBC have been in touch with you, and I know that you did a film feature with them. Just talk everyone through that.
I was on Countryfile just 3 weeks ago with BBC One with John Craven. They came and did a day and a half's filming here for the little slot on Countryfile. It was perfect timing for us in the nut world and the nut growers across the country to get the coverage as we did 3 weeks ago. Amazing that 10 million people view Countryfile, and we're also appearing at the beginning of December on a junior Countryfile programme called Down on Your Farm, which is going to be the early part part of December at sort of 5:30, which is like a children's version. We had a day filming here with the village primary school children, and that will appear again at a very good time, just the lead up and before Christmas.
Fantastic. So, I mean, that's the television side. What about Desi being featured in newspapers and magazines?
I have a PR consultant called Lisa. She's extremely well known in the sort of niche food business, and she gets me about 6 or 8 national mentions a year, which is all part of the sort of modern mix today. And, you know, we're heavily featured in 1 or 2 of the very popular food bloggers with all their readers today. So not only have we got a bit of TV and radio coverage, we've got the basic magazines that pick up articles and photographs on us, the social media side, and of course all our range of direct customers, trade customers and website customers as well.
Fantastic. If anyone wanted to sort of delve into further detail, what are the best ways to contact you?
I think the best way is simply on the Farm Office line, which is a simple 01732 882 734. If anybody Googles Potash Farm near Sevenoaks, we come up there. And the tree business, if you Google in walnuttrees.co.uk, that gives you the 2 websites, the main phone number, or you look at my professional profile on LinkedIn, Alexander Hunt. You'll find me on all those ways of communication.
Fantastic. Alexander, great to speak to you, and thanks so much for giving us an insight into your world.
The Property Hospital, Stray FM.
The Property Hospital is all about me answering your property woes and worries when it comes to your experiences in the property sector. Now, this week, I'm answering a question from Lisa, who's got this to say.
Alex, I've been into the estate agents and signed up to their mailings to get the brochures, but I've received so many that I feel are irrelevant. Why is this?
Lisa, interesting question there. Now, the simple answer is that as buyers, we say and think we definitely want a specific type of property that we've described to the estate agents. However, as human beings, we will also consider the grey areas when it comes to property. So therefore, estate agents are likely to send you properties that are going to push your boundaries, as one might just tempt you. Don't be put off by this and use it actually to your advantage and turn it around. Use the information they send to build up your own personal database, and so it helps you form a strong picture of what you definitely do want and what you do not want. As I mentioned earlier in the programme, property is about emotions, and no estate agent will be able to know how you personally feel about a property unless they run it past you. I hope this helps.
The Property Hot Seat. Stray FM.
Name.
Mark Fagan.
Business.
Winston Solicitors.
Years experience.
7 years.
It's great to have in the studio today Mark Fagan from Winston Solicitors. And Mark, I hear obviously you're very much a Leeds-based company, but I hear there are very much plans afoot at the moment.
Yeah, exciting times within the company. We are moving over to Harrogate. It will be in the town centre, but I can't say for definite as of yet.
Secret. All to look forward to. But I know you're an expert and lawyer on litigation. I thought we'd just sort of talk through the rental and the landlord and the tenant side of things, which I know you do a lot of. As you see it, from a landlord perspective, what are the pitfalls that you really need to be aware of when you're letting out your own property, your home at the end of the day?
Well, initially and surprisingly, is the number of landlords that don't actually enter into a written tenancy. Even if you're renting to a friend or a family member, it's important that you do get the tenancy set out in writing. With regards to the tenancy itself, the most common is an assured short-haul tenancy for a residential property. Again, a problem which becomes common is whereby people are renting to employees or a company. An assured short-haul tenancy for a residential property must be in an individual's name as a tenant. You can't name a company. If it's a company, it becomes what's known as a company let, so a common law tenancy. And then there are a whole world of problems that arise from that.
And I guess you also have issues if you're renting it to a friend of yours as well. You should get something in writing as a bare minimum, but I'm assuming an AST, a short-hold tenancy, is the way to go.
Yeah, definitely, because it protects the landlord And it also protects the tenant, so each party knows what their obligations are, what their liabilities are, and then if there's ever a dispute or an issue, you can rely on the tenancy and what's set out in that.
And what can you do? I mean, you often, albeit there's a lot of scaremongering I know out there, but if, for example, you get, unfortunately, a rogue tenant, they do exist, they don't pay, for example, or they don't treat the property particularly well, what can you actually do as a landlord to counteract that, possibly even in the first instance, and B, if it does happen, what can you actually do about it?
With regards to rogue tenants, obviously it's difficult to see who is a rogue tenant. You can carry out your reference checks, etc., which you can do through your agent. With regards to if you've got a rogue tenant in the property, if they're falling behind in rent, they're not paying their rent, they're in arrears, you can evict them within the fixed term of the tenancy under what is known as the Section 8 procedure. Now, that can only be used where the tenant is normally over 2 months in arrears. You serve the notice, it has to be in a prescribed format. You give the tenant 2 weeks in which to pay and rectify the issues. If they don't pay, then you can issue court proceedings to get them evicted.
But what are the costs involved? I mean, if you're drafting in yourself, you talk about lawyer costs and all of that, and you're going to court. I mean, surely this is going to be quite an ordeal all round.
Well, me personally, I tend to do things on a fixed fee. So it will depend on the basis of you're going for possession. So if it is purely rent arrears, you know, you're looking at a couple of hundred quid plus VAT to deal with that. Court fee, unfortunately, that can't be avoided. That's £355. If you're going on a Section 8 procedure, providing the tenancy allows it, you can reclaim these costs from the tenant themselves. So they get added to the amount of the arrears which you're claiming, which is good. Downside is if the tenant has nothing and you can't recover from them, then it's possible you won't recover any money at all.
But at least I suppose the flip side is you've got them out and start afresh. I mean, I suppose what you're saying, look, there are no guarantees. When you're, as you said, you can do the background check, you can sort of gauge the type of individual that the tenant is, but at the end of the day, it is a gamble with your own home. If you are going to let it out and the tenant lets the side down, well, there are ways to get around it and get them moved on, so to speak. But otherwise, yeah, you're taking a bit of a step into the unknown. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Obviously, you can't tell from just looking at a tenant what they're like. Also, yep. A tenant, you know, they may have a great financial history in the past. Things can happen. They can lose their job, for example, if that's the case. And these are things that, unfortunately, a landlord cannot foresee.
True. And I mean, there tends to be a lot of confusion, I think, out there, whereby someone's looking to sell their property. They've got a tenant currently there. What rights as a homeowner, as effectively a landlord, do you have to conduct viewings at the property to try and sell it? Because that's your end game plan. And indeed, how can you go about sort of exchanging contracts with a tenant specifically in the property?
Normally, if the tenancy is well drafted, it will have a clause in there which will allow the landlord to re-enter the property upon giving, it's normally 24 hours notice to the tenant. And that will allow the landlord to go in, obviously carry out viewings, etc. There should also be a clause in there which will allow the landlord to put for instance, a for sale sign or a to let sign in the garden. When the landlord does enter the property, I advise that they always take a witness with them, just in case there's ever any issue over possibly missing items or whatever. Yeah. At least the landlord is covered in that way. When you're coming to actually selling the property, if you're purchasing a property which has got a tenant in there and you don't want that tenant to remain, you need to make sure that the seller has served the relevant notice on the tenant. Otherwise, the purchaser purchases the property and is then stuck with the tenant and then has all the costs of dealing with it themselves.
Okay. Now, useful stuff. And I turn the tables for a moment from looking from a tenant perspective. You hear a lot about these sort of new WISI deposit schemes from the government and the new legislation surrounding them. Just talk everyone through what they are, how they work, and whether they are actually worthwhile at the end of the day.
Yeah, so the tenancy deposit scheme was designed to safeguard a tenant's deposit. Now, just a quick point is what is classed as a deposit. Obviously, someone pays, say, £500 because that's listed as the deposit, then that's fine.
Yeah.
There has been a question over, is rent which is paid in advance, is that classed as a deposit? If the rent paid in advance is used throughout the tenancy to pay rent, then it isn't classed as a deposit. However, if it's simply held as security, for example, that rent isn't paid, then it will be classed as a deposit. And a landlord has to comply with the rules of the tenancy deposit scheme. Now, the rules themselves are pretty complex, but quite severe for a landlord if they don't comply with them. Now, a landlord has 30 days from the date that they receive the deposit, not from the date of the start of the tenancy, to the date they receive the deposit, in which to provide the tenant with what's known as prescribed information.
Okay.
Now, the prescribed information, it sets out things like where the deposit is held, how much is being held, how any disputes will be dealt with, how any deductions can be agreed, etc. Now, if a landlord doesn't provide that information within 30 days, first of all, a landlord cannot evict the tenant on what's known as a Section 21 ground, which is the easiest route to get your property back. And also, a landlord can be sued for the return of the deposit and three times the deposit amount. It does happen. I've dealt with cases where we've been successful in suing a landlord because they haven't complied with the rules. The rules have been in place since 2007, so this isn't new, but it's still surprising how many landlords get it wrong. And yep, it can prove very, very costly.
Absolutely. And what do you do if you're a tenant in a property and that the landlord's not going to sort an issue? And you often hear, well, the boilers hasn't been fixed for several weeks, there's black mould here, here and here. What can you do from a tenant's perspective? How can you actually get the landlord to pick up the phone and sort it out?
Yeah, you get a lot of what I call Google lawyers who will advise tenants to withhold rent and things like that. My initial advice is never withhold rent. As soon as you withhold rent as a tenant, you're automatically in breach of the tenancy agreement.
As you said, you run the risk of getting kicked out.
Exactly, yeah. With regards to repairs, a landlord not carrying out repairs, now this is quite common. This is one of the only ways you can withhold your rent. Now, if you write to your landlord and tell him that there's a load of issues with regards to disrepair, etc., and the landlord does nothing, you could serve him or provide to him estimates of the work that needs doing and the work that needs carrying out. If he still doesn't do anything, you have the work carried out, send the invoice to him or her. If the landlord then doesn't pay, you are then within your rights to withhold rent to the amount of the invoice. That's the only time that you could offset rent against any repairs, etc. But whilst I've made that sound pretty simple, there is quite a rigmarole to go through to get to that point.
And would one of the deposit schemes that you mentioned, would they be able to help the tenant in that instance or not? And
because it's not a deposit dispute. You know, they're only in play where you're actually disputing how much of the deposit should be returned, really.
Great.
A landlord's under an implied duty to keep the property in repair. So if it falls into disrepair, then they're in breach of the tenancy themselves.
Fantastic. Yeah. Some great top tips there, actually, there, and just sort of dispelling, I think, some common myths at the end of the day. And also, what do you need to be aware of? If I'm a tenant and I'm about to sign my AST, what things do I need to be mindful of?
Yeah, well, first of all, if you're unsure as to the terms that you're signing up to, then take advice. You don't want to sign up to something that 3 months down the line you realise, oh, I didn't realise that, or I'm stuck in this, etc. Another point, make sure you can afford the rent.
Yep.
Don't go into a property and think, oh, well, if I can't afford it after 3 months, I can leave. If it's a 12-month tenancy, you're bound by that tenancy. Therefore, you are bound to pay the amount of the rent up to the end of the tenancy.
Yeah, contractual law.
Yeah, exactly. Make sure you're happy with the property itself. Have a good inspection of the property. You do get disputes where tenants will come along and say, well, there's damp here, etc., or I didn't realise this, didn't realise that. All that does is cause a dispute between yourself and the landlord, which again can go unresolved for some time and can prove costly. So really, make sure you can afford what you're going into, make sure you know what you're entering into, and most importantly, make sure you're happy with the property.
Yeah, go in with your eyes open.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Fantastic. So, Mark, really some fantastic sort of tips and tricks and inside knowledge there. Obviously, it's very exciting about your move to Harrogate. Now, if anyone on the landlord or the tenant side wants to touch base with you, what are the best ways at the moment to reach you prior to the grand opening and new move?
Yeah, well, they can get me on the telephone, 0113 320 5000, or if they want to drop me an email, it's maf@winstonsolicitors.co.uk.
Mark, thank you so much again, and look forward to catching up soon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Alex Goldstein's top tip.
On my travels, seeing new and existing clients, the one thing I often come across is the lack of building regulation approval, especially when it comes to converted attics, whereby homeowners have accidentally forgotten to inform building control at the council. Now, this is all absolutely fine until you want to sell. The buyer's solicitor is going to find out, and then it opens up a can of worms. They will be unable to insure your property correctly, as they can't be certain about the structure, nor indeed what has gone on behind the scenes. This will also damage your buyer's confidence in you and the property, which more often than not will lead to a fall through in the transaction. Now, if you're one of these people that's forgotten about this, my advice is to first of all speak with your solicitor. The advice is often probably going to be applying for retrospective approval. This will take a bit of time to do and may be some minor costs involved, but it's going to be well worth it. The number of times in my career where I've seen deals fall through right at the last hurdle because of this never ceases to amaze me. The best advice I can give is not to do it at all. That's the Alex Goldstein Property Show, and we really have crammed in some top tips and features yet again this month. If you really want some top expert advice, come to my educational talk at the Property Investors Network in Leeds in mid-November. This is going to be to about 150 people and is the largest meeting of its type outside of London. Full details are on my website, alexgoldstein.co.uk. The next episode is out on the 1st of December, so make sure you tune in for that. Until next time.